Don't you wanna die happy with a smile on your face? Wake up a laughing, cause you're free of all the things that would hold you from your ocean view. Life's a landscape. Why don't you bathe?
Hi, Kiara. How are you doing?
Ciao, guys. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, likewise. It's very lovely to see you, especially since you've got your big warm jumper on.
Oh, you look so cozy.
It feels really cozy. I love this coziness of winter.
Well, we should probably explain where you are. So where are you right now?
I am in the north of Italy, in the Dolomites. That is in one of the places that I grew up with, that is called Cortina d'Ampezzo. So on the mountain ski resort side of Italy.
Nice.
Yeah.
But of course, we met you in Bali, didn't we?
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a change for you. I was wondering earlier on, if you had to choose for the rest of your life between Balinese rice and nasi champur and a nice Italian pasta dish, what would you go for?
I mean, you know, it's a very interesting question because I'm not sure what I would choose for. I definitely choose the variety of vegetable of Italy, that's for sure. But in between a pasta and a nasi champur, I like them both. But like the variety of food that I can have here, definitely here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I miss Italian food.
You guys miss it, eh?
Oh, I'm hungry now.
Yeah, all this chat about pizza is making me want pizza.
You're going to go for pizza later on. I know that you're going to send me a picture and say like, we got a pizza done.
it's a possibility, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, were you in Italy then when you first discovered yoga?
Oh, I was in Milano when I first discovered yoga. I was really looking for something to save me and I couldn't find it anywhere. And a friend of mine brought me to several yoga classes in Milano. And it was almost 12 years ago. And I found my voice. That really what hooked me into yoga. Not the actual like physical aspect of that I've done it before already and I was running away of classes and say like, nah, that's never gonna be for me. But the voice of this man and his peace and his tranquility, it was really hooked me in. And I was in Milano.
What was the first type of yoga you started doing then?
Ashtanga.
Ah, gotcha.
That's very tough, Ashtanga, isn't it?
Yeah, I did seven years of Ashtanga.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. That's my background.
Mm-hmm. For our listeners who don't know much about yoga or perhaps just think yoga, there is one type of yoga, is it worth discussing the many types of yoga for a moment? And of course, the nuance between those types of yoga and Kundalini, which is what we're going to talk about today.
Oh, wow. Nice. I'm happy to talk about Kundalini.
So, I mean, there are, how many styles of yoga are there?
Oh, there's a lot.
Infinite amount.
Yeah.
So I live and I feel that yoga in itself is a path of union in between our soul and spirit and ourself. So it's a union. The word yoga really means union. And one of the steps to arrive from the illusion, from living in this separation, through coming back into union with God, coming back into union with spirit, there are different steps, right, that we have to do. And the physical aspect of yoga is one only of these steps, and is actually on the Patanjali limbs is step number 3 of 8 of them. So it's not really even that advanced. And I would see that as the activities, the practices that you do to purify the body. So while I'm saying this is because a lot of different yogis have been practicing different type of practices to arrive into that space of purification. So when the yoga industry, the boom of the yoga from the East came into the West, every one of those leaders were giving a little bit of their impression and their taste of what they have, you know, like what were the practices that really work better for them. And they create their own like styles of yoga. So now there are so many of them. I would say that the traditional one and the oldest one in terms of his history are definitely Ashtanga and are definitely Hatha yoga and Raja yoga, that is the combination of all different aspects of the limbs of Patanjali coming together into specific practices, as Kundalini yoga is one of the Raja yoga that are the most elevated, and Bhakti yoga as well. Bhakti is more the yoga of devotion. So there are, you know, different things, different, they change the flavor, right? What do you think, Julia?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a flavor, and we all find something that resonates with us. Yeah. And I think that's the route you go down, and that changes as well. I mean, I've practiced so many different styles of yoga, but I have a very strong background in traditional yoga. So then I think from there you can kind of, you've got that foundation of the teachings, and then you can kind of play around with some of the other styles. But for me, like, I mean, finding Kundalini was kind of like a light bulb moment of like, oh, okay, this is possibly what I've been searching for since I began yoga like 15 years ago or so. Yeah,
absolutely. Mm. I hear you on that so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because of course, for the audience again, Jules and I met Chiara. Well, actually, Jules met Chiara first through learning Kundalini with Chiara. And am I right in saying it was the first time you'd done Kundalini yoga?
No, I had done some Kundalini before, but I never took to it. And then when I guess it was maybe, I can't think how long ago it was, about 6-9 months ago, I was really looking for something to deepen my practice. And I just kept getting the message of Kundalini. It just kept like popping up for me, you know. And then eventually I heard about Chiara and I contacted her, and then I still kept like putting it aside. And then eventually one day I just went for it, and it was immediate. Like, I realized from the minute I think I walked into your space that this was the practice for me.
Nice. Well, I want to talk about Kundalini, but not just yet.
We are like little puppies like this. Give us to talk about Kundalini. Like, we want that.
Love it.
That's why we need him here.
You guys could just wax lyrically about Kundalini for about 2 hours, and I'd be like, but I got some questions.
Go ahead.
Okay, you little Kundalini monkeys. Let's take a step back because I think it's important for us and indeed our listeners to understand the context of really one of the conversations you and I had around the podcast and around my history as an addict and alcoholic and, you know, an unhealthy lifestyle. And of course, I had a discussion with you about what you had, what you described as I think a destructive city lifestyle. So I was keen to just for you to explain a little bit about what life was like before yoga or Kundalini, whichever came first, really, you know, that sort of transformational moment for you.
Absolutely. Thank you for this question. Like, I was living I come from 15 years of addictions, and when I found yoga, I was at the rock bottom of my pain in all ways, and I was really looking for salvation. Like, this is what really was I was looking for, and I was trying to look for that salvation from my pain everywhere outside me. And I'm quite I'm a number nine. I'm a master. Like, I love to master things. So I went very, and as a friend of mine used to say, you were just like, when I went too deep into yoga, we're just like, haven't changed much. Before, you were super deep into drugs and alcohol, and now you're all dedicated into yoga. It's exactly the same. So I have that, like, you know, type style of confirmation in the way that I deal with this. Yeah, that intensity that I really, but it was in a way my salvation as well. So going back to your question, I was looking everywhere. Like, I couldn't believe that there was only the possibility to see life through the length of pain. But I knew that, like, I was looking at our planet and I was just like, it's impossible that Mother Earth is so beautiful. Like, how those trees can be there in that perfect harmony and in that perfect way, how the mountains, how the rivers, how the animals, and we humans, we can be in harmony. So that was really what I was looking for. And everywhere outside, like, coming from a Western society, quite heavy, like, lineage of very traditional and old aristocratic Italian family, can you imagine the weight of the dogmas and the weight of conditioning that I was carrying with me? So there were no window, you know what I mean? Like I was not even allowed to go to a psychotherapist for you know, like, you have a problem, we're just gonna resolve it either with pills or, like, while you're talking about your problems, you know, like, you're a victim, da 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 da, and all of those type of reaction, when there were clearly a research that I was trying to do that it was not getting fulfilled anywhere. So, as I said, like, I was looking literally everywhere, in each parties, and I was very successful on being a great party girl. I was very successful on my work. I was very successful in everything that I was doing, but I was so unhappy, so, so unhappy, and so full of pain that, as I said, like, one day a friend of mine brought me into a yoga class for the first time, and I got a bad reaction straight away. Like, I went to this yoga class and there was this, like, teacher. She was like a model. She was bending herself all over herself, and nothing to blame to her. Like, she was great. I'm sure she was doing everything with her great intention. I was a piece of wood stuck full of drugs that I couldn't not even bend. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I was made of concrete, and that was not really exactly what I was looking for. So after this first experience, I put yoga on the drawing, and I was just like, no, it's never gonna happen again. That shit doesn't work for me. And then, as I said, like, lucky enough, very close to my house, there was this guy that was doing classes at his home, and another friend of mine told me, you have to try it. And I give it a try another time. I was really desperate. Like, I was really, really desperate. And I was just like, okay, I'm gonna give it a try another time. And this man had a completely different vibe. He was going to India. He just came back from India, and when you enter in his house, there was this mantra playing, the smell of incense. I arrived in, there was this peace that somehow some cells of my being recognize as home, and his voice, his calmness, really hooked me in. So that was really the hook, and the intensity of, like, I was sometime literally like doing 15 minutes, 20 minutes, and then running out of a class of an hour and a half because I couldn't stand it for how much in anxiety and pain I was. Like, I couldn't not even stay. Like Shavasana for the relaxation part for me was not available for more than 7 years. Like, I were just going to do the physical side with him because it was just like clearly giving me something, and I trusted into that I didn't even know what it was that was shifting something in me on a deeper level. And I trust that little you know, like opening on that door that I was trying to open since years. And that was it.
Wow. So when you took up yoga as part of a rehabilitation process, did you do anything else from a rehab perspective?
No,
did
nothing.
You take nothing. So you just went cold turkey.
Yeah.
And started doing yoga and meditation.
So what happened was that I was 28 and I would say that I've been very guided by the divine. And when I say that, there was a bigger plan for me than not being a drug addict, and God really worked on my side. So there were a lot of little synchronicity, a lot of little meetings, a lot of, like, you know, person that were giving me a little opening into my path and a little opening into my path. But in terms of support, no. I was 28 when I started. I was 27 when I started doing yoga. I did it in Milano for 2 years with this guy. And at the same time, I found a psychotherapist that finally understood me. And instead of telling me, like, other few ones that I went before that I ran out after 5 minutes because they were all telling me that my problem was that I was taking drugs and I was drinking and I was partying, and I was just like, you guys are just like completely like out of the track, you know, this is not my problem. I mean, of course it's part of the problem, but there is something underneath.
It's a symptom.
Yeah, yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, they were like, oh, no, we're going to put you under medicament. You're going to stop taking drugs. And I was just like, you guys are crazy. So anyway, So I finally found this psychotherapist, and I did 1.5 year of everyday yoga with Marco. That was my teacher back at the time, and this man, I was going to see him every week. And the good things about it was that they tried to put me under medicament a few times, but the thing is that as soon as I was taking some medicine, I become completely empty, and I didn't like that emptiness. Like they were putting me into a zero flat point that it was not nothing that I liked at all. So I thought that I was rather go through the intensity of my pain and moving out without taking anything extra of already what I was taking by myself, and really dealing with my pain in that way. And after 1.5 year, I left Milano, and I moved to Cambodia, where I lived remoted for 7 years. So I really recluded myself very far away from any distraction, because I knew that I was not strong enough, and I didn't have any sense of identity enough to be capable of not coming back into those addictions. And then if we can go even further into that, even though that choice has been taken, I needed to go through other 3 or 4 rounds of going back into drugs before I was falling out by myself on 2015. So it took me around 7 years before I managed to completely clear up myself. And now it's 7 years that I'm out fully and on my path of recovering.
Nice. That's a beautiful ending, or rather beginning.
Yeah.
Do you mind me asking what drugs you were using?
A lot of cocaine and a lot of, like, I started with ecstasy and joints, but then weed start to give me like a lot of paranoias and a lot of, like, you know, like bad thoughts. Instead, cocaine, you know, like the thing about cocaine that was really something for me is that I always felt that I was a fish out of the water in society. And for me, cocaine was giving me that power of being capable of being in society and be myself, whatever version of myself, you know, without being scared of being judged or, you know, like of, or, but it was just for the time being of being in that highness. And then after that, there were like the worst, like hell ever for days and days and days. So for So for more than 10 years, I was spending from my Monday to my Friday thinking about the fact that I was not going to get high. And on Friday, I was literally like crushing everything out and I was running to my dealer and then get completely fucked up and starting again the same process every Monday and again and again and again. And that has been hell. That has been really hell.
Well, I can relate to that.
Yeah.
For me, my habit started on weekends, but then I realized eventually I had a problem when it was every night, you know. I was doing cocaine on a Monday lunchtime.
Wow.
Or even Monday morning after a Sunday night, you know, after not sleeping. So, and when I found I was buying drugs every night or every other night.
Yeah.
And of course, drinking several pints of alcohol every day. Plus spirits as well. I realized I had a problem, but we have to. A lot of us have to hit rock bottom before we can get back up, right? So, and it's incredible that you discovered yoga to help you.
So, yeah.
So I'm interested. Then you've done all of this. Oh, sorry. Did you have a question?
Yeah, I just actually wanted to say what you were saying a minute ago about the cocaine and the way it made you feel and the way it was making you act, like kind of almost coming into your power. Would you say that in some regards, like the work within Kundalini kind of gives you that,
100%.
But without this, yeah, without the side effects. So there's no coming down. It's a consistency of feeling that way.
100%. And that's the reason why I do believe that this is like we have a technology in Kundalini yoga that is a cure for a lot of people that suffer from any kind of addiction, and especially those type of addiction with self-identity issues, you know, like in the way that I used to have, and self-esteem, because it gives you, it's strengthening your aura, your magnetic field, your nervous system, so you literally have the highness of you being you without the down. And actually, I have to say, like, you go down in Kundalini too. Did you felt
yeah,
it?
You
did
you, do.
You right? But it's just like it's really soften comparing to what it used to be like going, because it's just like they're just upgrade. So whenever you go into a bigger upgrade energetically with Kundalini, then you have a little bit of the spiral that goes down again, and then you need to catch up and going up again. But 100% I can totally relate, and this is one of the reason why when I discover Kundalini, that comes down on the line, and I will tell you the story a little bit of that, because it's quite interesting. Kundalini is a very powerful energy that finds you. You don't find it. Like it calls you in a way. Like it's really like in this way it's very selective. It's a very sophisticated technology, and not each being is ready to receive it. And in the way that it works, it's really cool. Pulling you in through your soul, decodification of your soul, in order for you to really step into your destiny and accomplish what you have to accomplish in this planet. And a lot of people that had abuses problem, drugs problem, alcoholism problem. We were all looking for that in a way. So we were all looking for stepping into that version of ourselves that was aligned. I mean, I believe you, Martin, can relate into that too, like to step mm-hmm. into that version of ourselves that it was free of conditioning, free of, you know, free of like that sensation of freedom, that sensation of liberation, and that sensation you have it when you are in connection with your soul. And those medicament, because then, you know, like those chemicals were giving us that same type of sensation for a very short amount of time. The difference is that with technology, with science, like Kundalini yoga, what you do is you sustain that and you're building that, and it's not gonna, and you know, like, it's not gonna leave you. It's just literally like it's gonna peel away those layers, and you can stand in your truth, you can stand in your power without the need of anything else than yourself and prana. Mm. That is, I found it fantastic.
Okay, so well, that's awesome. I just want to take a step back and unpack it a little bit more for our listeners who might not have a clue what Kundalini is. And perhaps, and I'm going to let you two just go in a second. So I'm holding you back, and then you're just going to go. And as soon as the bell goes, it'll be like, yeah, Kundalini is this, Kundalini is that. But essentially, if we could just have a discussion about what is Kundalini and why is it so transformative? Mm-hmm. And go.
I'm heading straight to Chiara.
I would love to hear from you, Julia. Like, and then I jumped in because, you know, I love to hear from the perspective of somebody that has been into this field since like 9 months. For me, it's like 7 years of researches. So really interested on your perspective on that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'd say it in the way that I feel about Kundalini rather than what I know it to be, because one thing I've learned from you is it's very much about experience, not about your knowledge. And for me, the practice of Kundalini kind of really brings all of the yogic practices together, because, you know, in a lot of classes I go to, we do asana, then we do breath work, then we do meditation. But within Kundalini, you really bring everything together. And through bringing it together, it's just like this instant switch, this kind of instant upgrade, an ability to come right into your center and find this incredible sense of focus. And through that focus, you'd start tapping into your inner power, your innate power that we've all got.
So, and this is the Kundalini energy.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it's about tapping into your Kundalini energy, which is at the base, and you're allowing that to rise.
At the base. So again, remember our listeners.
At the very base of our being. So the base of the body, the base chakra, we could say.
Okay. Yeah. The root.
The root of your being,
The root chakra.
Yeah. That's where the Kundalini energy lies.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so part of this process is to unlock that and to release it. Is that
100%,
right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's a sacred technology. So when we speak about Kundalini is an energy, and it's an energy that lives at the base of our spine. It's called Kundalini energy, and it moves through the chakras by awakening it, and it clears up the fogginess, let's put it in this way, of the pollution that we carry on our wheel, on our energy centers, for them to spin in a way that is appropriated in order to have an harmonization in between all our bodies. That is not only this physical body, but we also have an energetic body, we have a mental body, we have an emotional body, and all of those bodies, all of those part of us, all of those aspect of us are taken in harmony and in place by part of them, by those wheels, let's say, that are the one that are more common knows in the West societies are the chakras, okay, and are the one more close to our physical body, and are the one that are related to make the organ function in a certain, on a proper way, okay? So, and this is what the Kundalini energy does. That's one thing. But Kundalini yoga It's another thing. It's a technology. Is a transportational system. This is the way that that my teacher loved to say it, and I do relate a lot into that. It's a transportational system that takes you from a lower energetic point and it brings you to an upper level energetic point. Okay, so this is what it does, and the things that we do, the practices that we do are movement, pranayama, and mantra together, and mudras, okay? So are all the aspects, as Julia said, of yoga, but they're coming together into a technology that in a much faster way support the rising of that energy. Let's say that back in the days, the yogis were spending thousands of years in the caves, studying and receiving and downloading those informations, years and years and years and years staying there, and then they were passing this information from teacher to student and all in the caves, because they were superpowers, because they were awakening their superhuman potential, and they needed to hide. They needed to hide. They needed to stay sacred, because they were going to get killed if they were outside in the world and express those powers, right? Because we're going completely against to the patriarchal control of the last 5,000 years in which we were used to live. So they kept it very sacred. They were doing all of these practices in their caves. We changed completely era. We are into a phase right now in the course of humanity where everything is accelerated in a way that it's almost like it takes time for us to really stay on the pace of the evolution of us with the technology, with everything that is happening right now, right? And it goes, and this is normal. We're getting more and more light. We're getting more and more and more combined with machines. And where these technologies come, and the reason why it has been delivered to us is to upgrade our system in the fastest way possible in order to be capable of operating in the evolution of humanity, of us as a human being, as a species, without losing our power over other intelligence that are trying to really make us being extremely, extremely caged in a way. So that's the power of Kundalini Yoga. That's what really Kundalini Yoga does. And I hope that I've been clear enough and we can unfold and unfold into that more and more.
Yeah, no, I think you have. I think that was a really good introduction to it.
Yeah, definitely.
Have you got anything to add?
No, I mean, I just add, like, for me and my journey with it, you know, when I came into Kundalini, I was struggling a little bit, well, quite a bit really, with depression. And I have to say, it was like an instant transformation. It wasn't even like, it didn't take me weeks to feel better. It was, you know, I did a 3-day intensive with you. And by the end of that 3 days, I was like a different person.
And that's what it does.
Not even, yeah. And that's what people say that, you know.
Hugely transformational in that regard.
It's transformational, and it's very powerful.
And that's certainly one of the many reasons why I wanted to talk to you on the podcast, because as you know, one of the main things we're trying to do with the How to Die Happy podcast is to introduce people to new concepts of how to live better in order to die well. You know, I mean, it's as simple as that. It's on the name of the podcast, How to Die Happy. And of course, How to Die Happy, really the secret of that is in living well. And I think one of the things I'm loving about doing this show is that we're constantly talking to people every week who have a different perspective on providing practical utilities for people to live a better life. And it could be diet, it could be Kundalini yoga, it could be slowing down, it could be I've forgotten about all of the guests we've had. It could be plant medicine. It could be ayahuasca or psilocybin. So, and all the many other things. Or service to others, of course. You know, we had a guest recently who created the plastic exchange, a Balinese chap, an amazing guy, called Mare Yasa. And actually, he's a deeply spiritual man, actually, isn't he? But because he's Balinese, and, you know, most Balinese are deeply spiritual. But he has dedicated a lot of his life in service to others in some ways, shape or form, and certainly with the plastic exchange. So that is fulfilling. That makes his heart sing, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was one of the main reasons why we wanted to get you on. But I was super conscious that there are some, you use the word technology, there are some technical conversations to have around Kundalini. Now, that said, before we ask any more questions, I think we might have a couple of audience questions that might be quite well timed for this particular point of the show. Don't worry, ladies, we're still going to get to talk about Kundalini. So, but let's have some Be My Guest questions.
Be my guest, let's talk, my friend, let's talk, my friend, this is not the end.
Is there a Kundalini set or practice or mantra that you would recommend for staying spiritually strong and resilient and maintaining hope and faith during these very overwhelming and chaotic times?
Good question.
I love this question. And I mean, I would say anything. Like, this is the first things that come to me. Like, even from a 3 minutes, like, little set to a longer meditation. The good things about Kundalini, and then I go specifically on what we can actually suggest to this wonderful lady that just asked this question. But the good things about Kundalini is that there is anything for everyone. Like, it's just so vast. With 3 minutes, you can completely change your frequency. So and that is the fantastic, because it's very adaptable into this lifetime and very adaptable to our lifestyle. So I would say we always need to look, like, my suggestion is always, like, look at your lifestyle, look how much you are committed already to a practice. Because if I'm going to come to you and say, like, go into a 20-minute set to really work your navel point, and then do a meditation of 31 minutes, and then do that other exercise, you're going to look at me and say, like, yeah, great, thank you so much for your suggestion. I might never going to do anything. Bye. You know, I might not going to do anything of all of that.
Hardcore.
You know what I mean? Like, so what I'm saying is that, like, I'm always like, whenever I work with clients as well, and I support them on creating their rituals, supporting them on creating their practices, just look at your lifestyle and be realistic on how much time you have to commit to one thing on a daily basis for at least 40 days. And that will change your life completely. So to stay connected and to stay kept on faith, first of all, at the mantras. The mantras are all of them are their angelic code that are downloading into your consciousness, God consciousness. So straight away. So this is already an incredible way for you, and it's very simple. You can play the mantra, like, around your house every single day, and just use them as a tool, as mantra in your sleeping time as well. And something that really resonate with me, and it works with me a lot, very well, and I do products that a lot, it's breath of fire. And the reason why I'm saying breath of fire, that is a specific way of breathing that I can show it, like, very simply, or Julia can show it, that she has probably more space than I do to bring your hands up. There is a specific exercise that is called Ego Eradicator, that is 3 minutes exercise that you can use to amplify your electromagnetic field, your aura, and strengthen your nervous system straight away. So with that little tool of 3 minutes, you can really go like very well. And then if you're a yogi practitioner, another set that I would love to add, because you might gonna be a yogi practitioner, so you can really add a longer one. Like my favorite set is called the Nervous System Overall, and is a set that specifically work to your core, because one of the things that we need to remember is that we have a space that is the most important space that we need to cultivate and clean on a daily basis. That is our third chakra, that is the navel point. When the navel point, it is the space underneath your belly bottom. Julia, you can just show where it is with your hands if you want. Yeah, there, exactly that point there. When that point, when your core is strong and you have a strong foundation on your being, then you can talk about faith, and you can talk about being in connection with God, and we can talk about, you know, like being capable of standing straight in this life, in these times of whatever turbulence in which we are, of transformation. So
gotcha.
These two things, but definitely you don't need to do it, but you can show it the position like of ego eradicator. You go with your hands up at 60 degree, open it up a little bit more, open it up a little bit more at 60 degree. Yes, there. That's it. And then you start pumping the navel in and up, in and up, in and up. Look at her navel. Can you see the navel, how it's moving? In and up, 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 in and up. Exactly. Go ahead. You're Martin too. You're breathing with
your... So you're breathing as well. You're breathing through your nose.
You're breathing with your navel. Yes, a breath of fire.
Okay. Like
you're,
that.
You're breathing through your nose. Maintain the elbow straight. Maintain the elbow straight. There, close your eyes. Close your eyes and bring the focus to your third eye point.
Gotcha.
Exactly.
Unconscious people will be listening to this, so we can't do it forever.
Okay, and then you breathe in, so you bring your thumbs together over your head like this, and you stretch the spine, and you visualize your own light moving from the navel all the way up into your electromagnetic field, and then with the exhalation, you bring the light down into your aura. And that's what you do.
Nice. Nice demonstration, ladies. Thank you very much.
And I do believe...
That, and what do you call that? You call that the...
Ego eradicator.
So yeah. that's a good 3 minute way to start then.
That's it. Like I.
And you can do that anywhere.
Anywhere. I mean, you can, like, you know, like, of course you can. You can also, the good things about it is that's also people like that they don't have the, because I hear a lot of people say, oh no, I'm not meditating because I cannot sit like cross leg, and I'm like, what the fuck? Excuse me. Like, it's not that you need to be seated cross-leg, you know? Like, you can be seated on a chair and still you can breathe, you can close your eyes, and you can tap into yourself anyway. So this type of exercise, the good things about it is that you don't need to be capable of sitting cross-leg. You can be on a chair and just put your hands up and do this 3 minutes. And even though you don't put your hands up and you just do breath of fire for 3 minutes without your hands up, it's just life-changing, really life-changing.
I like that you shared that, and I like that you brought that up, because it's something we discussed a few times on the show, and something I discuss often with people, more people back home, I think it's safe to say, when we talk about meditation, and they say, oh, you know, I've got time to meditate, and or as you say, I haven't got the right environment to meditate. And I think when you really break it down and you're able to explain to somebody, look, a meditation is literally one conscious breath.
Absolutely.
After another,
mm-hmm.
Right? So have you got time to breathe consciously once? Well, yes, I have. Okay, awesome. Well, why do you start there? And then when you realize how much you like it, because actually it is a profoundly beautiful feeling when you really do take one proper conscious breath.
Yeah.
Why don't you follow up with another two, mm-hmm. or three, or four, or nine, make it 10. And hey, before you know it, you're meditating. So, so I'm really keen on the How to Die Happy podcast. Always that we, you know, we're getting attacked by loads of mosquitoes. always that we try to share these nice little utilities with people to say, okay, look, you know, Kundalini might sound complex. There's a lot to learn, a lot to understand. Start here. Start with 3 minutes. So
yeah, and I totally agree with you with everything that you said, Martin. And you know, like the thing about these technologies and the reason why you hook people in once you get over the barrier of saying, oh, you need to use the turban, those guys are all fucked up, they look like weird and they look crazy. There are so many reasons why we do certain type of things in the way that we do, but like breaking down to the practicality of that is that with one minute of, as you said, conscious breath, and especially when you're moving energy that you haven't, when you're moving part of your body and you're moving energy that you haven't moved before, with just 1 minute you can have an experience of yourself that you never had before. And that experience, once that you are aware and present into that experience, will never gonna leave you, and you can come back into the experience anytime you want. So that's where then you can have more desire of coming back into that conscious breath. Because most of the people, what they say, you know, like they say like, oh yeah, I mean, I like what is the benefit? Nothing. Yeah. Straight away. Probably, you know what I mean?
I want results. I want results now.
And that's the good things about Kundalini Yoga, is give you results now. And that's really what is the hook for people. That's really what I love it about it, because there is no one person that has ever come to one of my class or the class where I went to my teachers that has come out of that session and say, I haven't felt nothing. You know what I mean? Nothing has been shifted on me. It's impossible. Mm. You can like it or not, you can love it or hate it. Most of the, like, there is generally, like, there are either haters, because I tell you why there is haters. The haters are there because they are, most of the time, they are not ready to face what is underneath that need to be seen. Like, for example, my brother loved the mantras, and it were just like, and he had a lot of things, and it were just like, I cannot even stand for like 2 minutes in a class of Kundalini Yoga that I'm getting mad, completely mad. Like, he couldn't.
Really?
He couldn't. And he does this reaction.
What was making him mad? Was it the, an internal madness? Or
exactly.
Was he irritated by everything outside?
No, it's the internal madness of like having the feeling that all of those things that we hold on, you know, that are our safe space, our pain, because we hold into pain most of the time because we don't know anything else, and because the ego doesn't know anything else, is holding into that pain, believing that this is the only things, and anything that is out of that comfort zone is very uncomfortable. Kundalini Yoga puts you on the edge, puts really on the edge. Like, even with 3 minutes of hands like this, you're gonna start saying like, what a beep I'm doing here. like this is just like, this is killing me. Like, the first time I found out Kundalini Yoga, that I was in my last round of drugs, like I was in my last like peak of my drugs experience, and I went to this healer and she did a energy cleanse to me, and she was a Kundalini Yoga teacher, and this is how I found out Kundalini Yoga. And I was very, as I told you, like, you know, I was just like, I want to get it all, I love the mantra, I want to get into that shit, I don't care, let's do it. So I did a private class with her. And as soon as she said to me to do ego eradicator and bring my hands up, first of all, my hands were not going upper than this. Like, they were not. Like, this was the maximum.
You couldn't do a 45 degree angle then.
No. I was like this. I was just like, this is my maximum. And then she goes like, start doing breath of fire. I did like three sniffs with my nose, and I got full on into a panic attack. Full on. My body paralyzed, the left side of my body completely paralyzed. Like, I couldn't barely move my hands, and I was just like, I can't. Like, it took me, since that session with her, 3.5 years of listening only to mantras to be capable of applying the technology on my field. But there is a but into that. I had a lot of like heavy holds. So that was I was curing in before. So that was needed before I could enter the access of this body. I needed to work through some other layers of my subconscious that were not allowing me to really not even doing Breath of Fire for like not even 10 seconds.
That was a good first question to get us going,
that
wasn't it?
That was an amazing answer.
We've got a couple more questions from the same caller. So let's see what she has to ask next.
So if you had only 10 minutes in the morning to do a short Kundalini practice, what would you say would be something that you would incorporate every day that is maybe the most powerful or effective set that is between 10 or 15 minutes?
Thank you. You've answered a little bit, but I think, okay, go. What have you got?
No, I have the answer. So the most part, so as I said, this is the way I like to do it. So I looked at the master that is Yogi Bhajan, that is the one that is our teacher, the one that brought the technology to the West, okay? So he gives to us a protocol to follow since when you go to sleep up to all the rest of your day, okay? So the first things, the really first things that he said, sleep with mantras. If you don't sleep with mantras, it's not working. So really this is what it is. Like you need to infuse your field with those higher vibration. And I'm going to say, like, as I said, I'm a master. Like, I love to mastery things. So I'm giving the mastering suggestion right now. So sleep with mantra. I'm not going to go into all the bathroom protocol. Let's escape that for a second because this is like 35 minutes, 40 minutes. It's 40 minutes. Exactly. That's just a podcast itself. So let's go to the mat. And there is a set that is called Wake Up Set. There are three exercises in which there is ego eradicator, the one that we just did, and two exercises, one to work your navel point and one to work your neck gland, okay, behind the neck. So we have two very important glands that need to be put in function in order for the rest of the glands to secrete on a proper way. So with these three exercises, it's called morning set. It takes around 11 minutes to do. That's done. And a little bit of cat cow. That's it.
Nice.
In 15 minutes.
You literally did have the answer.
Yeah. In 15 minutes. In 15 minutes, you're done.
Nice. Okay. Well, we should try to share that somehow.
Yeah,
I don't know how we'll do it, but...
Yeah, I can share that with our audience.
Let's try and share that, perhaps.
Do a little video.
Yeah, maybe do a little bonus video. Mm. Yeah, let's do that. Okay, not to sign you up to lots of extra
work. On another
point,
though, you're already getting the mantras every night.
Well, I was just going to say that. So I've been listening to mantras every night since Julia started doing Kundalini. So and not just at night, is it?
Most of the day.
We had them on all day. We actually had a mantra on while we were setting up our studio at home, so...
I have a mantra playing 24 hours. My question to you is, how do you like? Do you feel any like sort of like changes in your field since you're sleeping with mantra, or even it could be only just like a better sleep, or maybe not?
Well, I'm probably I'm the wrong person to ask because I was already listening to isochronic frequencies and binaural beats before I went to sleep, so. When we first met, you had to sort of get your head around that, didn't you? What happens now is I'm playing my isochronics over here on one side of the bed and she's playing her mantras on her side of the bed.
I love it.
But they're obviously...
Yeah, but the mantras stay on all night.
They do,
They don't go off.
No, so. And so I... So, but in answer to your question, when I discovered the power of frequency and started to research the very subatomic nature of our being a vibration, and then started to understand the isochronics can be produced at a certain frequency to help align certain energy centers, my whole world changed. And so I frequently utilize different frequencies if I feel blocked. for different chakras. And yeah, in answer to your question, I sleep like the dead.
Yeah, I love
that. Isn't that right?
You do, yeah, yeah. And I think actually, I think I've noticed since I've been playing the mantras, your dreams have been gentler.
Yeah, gentler, as in
when we first met, your dreams were quite very active and sometimes troublesome, I think.
Yeah.
And now that you don't have that.
No, I was having some, because I wouldn't say dreams, you know, I have more like visions, you know, like dreamscapes, you might refer to them as, where they're immensely vivid and immensely memorable. And they are, there's a metaphor in it within them. And I've had premonitions as well, haven't I? So yeah, without a doubt, that's certainly helping my practice. I've been talking to, well, I don't think I have really talked to you about it, but I'm coming around to be converted to not that I was ever against Kundalini, but I think I might want to give it a go now. I'm feeling a bit of a calling toward it.
There's been a few times you've said you were going to join.
Yeah.
It just hasn't happened yet, but I think it will happen when it's right.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, part of the process is this early start and committing to 40 days, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's a huge commitment. Although, you know, you do it now every day anyway, don't you? So and get up super
early. This is what I always say. Like, the way that I started was just like, for me, when I understood that the only way for me to get into the possibility eventually to do a teacher training in Kundalini was to get my 40 days done. You know what I mean? That was it. I started with 10 minutes. Like, for me, it was no brainer. Like, I was like, I'm not going to commit to anything longer that is 10 minutes of my time for 40 days. And I was like, and I say to myself, if I don't have the space to come back to myself for 40 days, for 10 minutes, how am I going to believe that, how am I going to believe that I can succeed and create the movement and the impact that I want to create on the planet and in humanity? So I was just like, I was just like, okay, 10 minutes, I can. So I started with that, and that opened up that first 10 minutes of 40 days, that opened up like all the other, like, the unfolding of all of these and the velocity, because that was in 2015, you know, like that was not a long time ago. Like, I mean, it's still 7 years, and the amount of work that I've done into the 7 years, but like the growth and the transformation that has occurred into that, like it's you can see pictures of me. Like, I was saying that the other day to a friend, to my psychotherapist, actually. And I told her, like I used to have my left, so I used to take cocaine a lot with my left nostril. And you know that we have
same here.
Right, same there, right? So you know that we have, like, and it's also like trauma stayed in the body, and a lot of them you can see it in the face, right? Like a lot of line and you know, like a lot of different things are shared in the face about like what are the things that are stuck into your field. So I used to have my left eye that it was very, very, very clearly visible that it was closer than the right. So the right was very open and the left was very close. Like, now they're equal completely. This is completely cleared up.
I had the same thing, although I don't know whether it's cleared up. Do you notice that when I laugh now, is my left eye more closed than the right eye?
I am going to be honest here and say, no, I think they're pretty equal.
Oh, well, I had exactly the same problem. So, yeah, my left nostril was my go-to because I'm left-handed.
You see?
I guess.
It's very interesting.
I had the same problem with my left eye.
Yeah.
I'd not attributed that to cocaine use, although, obviously, I didn't really want to attribute any of the bad feelings that I had to my drinking and drug use. I mean, I just don't, do you?
Yeah, I just give it to that, and it's probably that and you know what I mean? Like, there are so many other things that can contribute into that, but like to say that like we're really like we can change the confirmation, like I don't personally believe that I look as a 38 years old woman thinks that I am, and you know, like, it's really a yoga that keeps you young, like extend your longevity, extend your vitality, and this is I believe it's essential, you know, like, and as well, like,
yeah.
Yeah, and it really helps with addiction. Like I found another big fan and practitioner that share Kundalini a lot is Russell Brand. That is another one that has been going through the 12 steps. He did all the 12 steps and rehab and everything. And he used a lot of Kundalini, and he shared a lot of Kundalini like practices in his talks and podcasts and shares, because it really helped him a lot. So it's really powerful for like addict like us.
Yeah, well, this is something that we've been talking about as a side thing anyway, to do with a documentary idea that we're working on. But I'm part of my recovery story, as you know, was I'd actually been sober a year from alcohol anyway in London, but I in the end I had to just remove myself from my whole environment and move to Bali to self-isolate and to do the inner work that way. So that was my shadow work, was taking myself out and moving to Bali. But I discovered yoga very early on when I came here, and I started practicing. It was mainly vinyasa, regularly, at least once a week, usually 2-3 times a week, and it absolutely helped me. There's no doubt about it. And I'm not convinced that many people would think about yoga being a go-to treatment for addiction.
Well, no, I mean, even for me on a small addiction level, as soon as I started Kundalini, I couldn't drink coffee anymore. It was like there's an instant switch, and my whole being just said no. Like, I would go to get a cup and I just had to put it down. It wasn't,
so it worked.
Yeah.
But I suppose the point is, do the majority of folks at home think of yoga as a treatment, as an addiction treatment?
I'd say possibly not, actually. No. And it's kind of nice to get that awareness out there.
I think it's opening up, and more people are getting to, you know, to this type of holistic approach, and especially with what happened like lately now with, you know, being recluded like in their house for days and days and days and years, actually, like that has been a very big opening for that. But what I want to say to you, Martin, like the reason why I personally believe that is like that it helped is because you were going back for 3 days in a week, that discipline of going back into something that it was giving you a better feeling of what you were feeling before. And that was really the hook again of like when you get into like, you know, like it's really the discipline. At the end of the day, like nothing worked to done once. You can have an experience, you know, like you can have an experience. You can say like, oh my God, that was great. I had that incredible experience. But if you don't start to integrate those practices on a daily basis, they don't work. And that's the reason why the 30 days is very important, because in the 30 days you start to break all the subconscious patterns and implementing new pattern into your habits. And it's really all about habits. It's really all about habits. Like we are like we are habitual beasts in that animal aspect of us, and to break that it require time, and we need to give another experience of something that is different from what you used to do until there. So, and for example, what happened with Julia, I believe, with coffee, we're just like, oh, I have something that is giving me energy right now that I'm implementing on my routine. I don't need coffee for energy. You know what I mean? So we placed the exercise and then the old habit goes. And that's the reason why one of my teacher always says, like, keep going with your life. Do exactly everything as you're doing. Don't change anything. Add 10 minutes a day of Kundalini, and you will see that things will start shifting out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's even...
And it's as simple as that, which is pretty incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, and the only thing is really committing for 40 days. Go ahead, my love, sorry.
Yeah, and I'd find even with... it's fine. I would say even with general yoga practices and even other kind of movement practices, as you start to feel really good from those practices, other things drop away from your life because 100%. It doesn't make you feel good anymore, and it kind of conflicts with what you're doing. You know, so for me, like when I was getting really heavily into movement and into meditation, I didn't want to go out in the evening because I didn't want to miss that morning class, and I didn't want to feel bad when I got to the class. So
absolutely.
It wasn't even really, I had never felt like it was a conscious choice. These things just dropped away because I was feeling so good and I wanted to keep feeling good.
Absolutely.
Mm. Well, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. It's that feeling good sensation.
You choose what makes you feel good, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So something you talk about in your work is about how people can create the life they want. And I suppose I'm interested to know how would you say that Kundalini allows people to create the life they want?
It gives them strength and power and the capacity of, so if we think about that, we're energy beings, right? Like we are being of energy, made by energy. So what Kundalini does, it's creating a stronger field of energy. So if you have more energy, you have more space, you have more clarity, you have more focus, you have more awareness, you can be more present, you can be more magnetic. And this is all what it is at the end, right? So in the way, how do we gonna create the life that we want? We need energy. We are energy hunters because we have a certain amount of time during our day, and we live on this plane of planet Earth, in this plane reality. We live into time and space, that we don't live into that in other different dimension in which we live, but we don't want to go there. Let's talk about what is in this specific...
Yeah.
Let's talk about what is in this specific, like, lifetime reality in which we live. We're dominated by time and space. So, and in order to achieve the maximum of those days and hours and time that we have, we need energy. We need a lot of energy. And Kundalini is an energy provider. So is giving you that capacity of not losing time by being numbed by whatever is your neurosis, your paranoias, your whatever it is, and have those energy and utilize those energy to accomplish what you have to accomplish during the day. So, you know, like, the thing is that, like, in the way that I work with, like, the way that I work with my clients and the way that I work with clients, like, I do specifically work with leaders that are on their path of creating an impact on this planet, okay? So there is a specific niche that I'm really focusing on. But at the same time, like, whoever apply those teachings and apply those techniques in their life, they can really accomplish much more of what they are doing in order to function on a higher level in their lifestyle, whatever it is.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Nice. Yeah, no, I do. I think that was a wonderful answer as well. I think it's safe to say that you discovered very quickly a clarity, didn't you?
Yeah.
When you started doing it, it removed the fog.
Yeah, lifts the fogs. The fog brings you into a very... I mean, I've always found it very easy to kind of come into my center and be focused, but I find with the Kundalini practices, it you sustain it for longer, and it's an even deeper level.
Yeah. Are you, Julian, working with your navel? Go ahead.
No, carry on. Go. What were you going to say?
Do I work with my navel point?
Yeah.
Yes, every morning, yeah. In my morning sadhana, I do quite a lot of navel a naval work, mainly because, you know, that's one of the things you've advised me to do.
Yeah.
And we were doing a lot of that in our daily sadhana when we were doing the training. So, yeah, I keep that going.
How do you feel about that?
Yeah.
Do you feel that you have more
good?
Like, yeah, right?
Yeah, and people have commented on it, actually, like how I've just become a stronger person in the way I approach things, or the way that I'll speak up for myself, or just not be afraid to voice my opinion or to share. And I've always been physically quite strong, but I think through the naval point work, because you're also working with, you know, you're focusing your gaze, you're working with your breath, you're working with a mantra, and you're doing the naval point work, that strength is your entire being becomes stronger.
100%. You know, at the end of the... go ahead, Martin. Now I'll let you go.
Sorry. No. Go.
You go. Now it's your turn.
Well, all I was going to say was when I first met Jules, one of the things she said was that she felt that her throat chakra was blocked, and that she couldn't always voice express her true feelings, which ironically is one of the deathbed regrets, isn't it? I wish I'd had the courage to do that. But actually, it wasn't your throat chakra then. I don't know, because actually through doing this work, you found that ability to articulate exactly how you feel.
Yeah, but you have to work through all the chakras to get. So for me, I have had a very strong throat blockage, and actually mainly through a physical injury that manifested my throat chakra being blocked. But I think through strengthening my navel point and all the chanting, I mean, I do a lot of chanting.
Yeah.
You know, that started with Kiara in the training, and I continue that. So I chant all the time now, which has definitely strengthened my throat.
Yeah. No, it's been a wonderful transformation to watch. And as you say, many other people have noticed it, and people have noticed that Jules has just got this more effervescent glow about her, you know? Like, I mean, she lights up the room anyway, right?
Uh-huh. Oh, absolutely. But like that's the thing, you know, like it takes out what is already in there. So this is what is all about. So like Jules' light is getting brighter and brighter because she's getting polished and polished by all of the layers of pollution that it was there. And pollution are created by conditioning from our parents, childhood trauma, our beliefs, what we have done in past experience, you know, like all of that. She's clearly clearing all of that, and she's getting brighter and brighter. But if you look, like, it's the same for me. Like, if I look a picture of myself 3 years ago, but even a year ago, like, it's just incredible, like, how much younger and stronger and healthier I look the more that I apply those teachings. You know what I mean? Like people go on the other level. Like people, they get older and we get younger. And I love that. You know what I mean? Like, in spirit and in physics. And this is what it is. And they look at me and say, you know, like they look at us and say, like, what do you do? I'm applying the yoga, but I don't have time. And I'm like, great. So stay where you are.
Okay. Good luck.
I don't know why.
I think I was Googling. I was looking for an image of me for the profile image for something to send to somebody. And I just Google imaged myself. And we found an image of me, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
Wowzers, from what, 2012, maybe 2013, when I was I had a creative agency in the UK called McGrath O'Toole, which I set up with this wonderful man called Don McGrath. And there was a PR shot of me standing next to the sign of this business. And I looked, God, dead.
And this is exactly what it is, like a zombie and humans. This is how we divide the categories, like either, and you can feel it, like you can see it, like there are either zombie or humans, human being. And when we are human being, we are
and I
go ahead,
cool,
you go.
No, you were going. What were you going to say?
Saying,
no, you go.
And when we are human beings, we're literally living from our energy. That's what I was going to say. So we know that our yes. energy field is the most important thing to take care of. And we start from that point. And then from there, everything brightened up.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to say.
No, well, I'm sorry for interrupting you in flow. I think it's an important thing to point out to people who maybe aren't involved in any of these practices or perhaps anything per se. Because I'm keen to point out that this is not me judging people who don't do yoga or breath work or anything like that. Yeah, ultimately, as I've just explained, I was one of those people. But I was also damaging my mind, body and spirit in various ways, not just with alcohol and drugs either, by the way, with the food that I was drinking. I was so much of a drinker, I had to even drink my food. No, with the types of food that I was eating, the lack of sleep that I was getting, the activities or the lack of activity that I was involved in, the people that I was surrounding myself with who, some of which were the wrong kind of energy, as it transpired. So it's all to do with, as you say, it's conditioning, and I think it's important. It's important that we discuss that at least make an invitation to anyone listening to this. If you don't know where to start, and you are concerned that you're sort of feeling a little bit like that, then perhaps just take stock of what you're consuming. And I don't just
100%.
Mean orally. What are you 100%. Listening to? What are you watching? Who are you surrounded by? Yeah. You know, what's the energy feel like? Because if you genuinely do feel dead, then that's probably because you've got no energy. And it's not just like the traditional physiological energy that we understand from Western medicine. It's a different kind of energy, which from the sounds of it is what Kundalini does. It charges you up. And leaves that charge in you for a day.
Yeah, and it's so good to know that we can change that.
Absolutely.
You know, we have these technologies, and there's so many other things we can do. I mean, even just getting up in the morning and dancing is going to change your energy. So I think that's something that's really nice for people to know that that's how they might feel right now, but they don't have to.
Yeah. And there are many, many, many ways you can do it, of course.
Yeah, and I totally resonate and agree. And there are so many things that I would like go and you know, like dive deeper into everything that you said, Martin. And you know, like the thing is that, like what I do something that makes you feel good, whatever it is, you know, like do something that elevate your energy. If you feel stuck, and as you said, like I want to say that as well, like I have a very like Italian sense of humor in a way, like and I'm a very direct person, but there is no way of judging. Like I'm not judging anyone that is not doing anything. I've been in that field for so long, and because I've been in that field for so long, I became an ambassador of the possibility of what is if we take responsibility and if we decide to change our life, and it's possible. What I don't like is victimhood, like people that are victim of themselves, like people that are complaining and then say like, oh, but I have nothing to do. And I'm like, no. That's not true, because if we manage, me and you, like, and we have two examples here of two people that they were really stuck into heavy, 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 heavy behaviors, and we changed that, everyone can change it. And my behaviors were not only 15 years of drugs. Like, I come from so many traumas, and I overcome, like, demons in all faces and spaces. And if we have that possibility, it means that there are the tools for us to do in that. So if you're happy with your life, keep going and doing whatever you want to do. We're not judging. But if you are complaining about your life and you believe that there is nothing you can change, this is not true. You can. And you have the tools incorrect. And the capacity for yeah. doing it. Right?
Nice. She just dropped the mic then, didn't she? Nice. I got a lot of time for what you just said there. Yeah, boom. That's me done. I don't know who said this, but I use the phrase often, and it's what you're not changing, you are choosing.
Absolutely.
And I think there's a lot of power in that statement. And hey, listen, I was the victim. I used to...
Me too.
I was constantly complaining about my life. Why does this always happen to me? Why is this? Why is that person? Why is, you know, it was never there was never acceptance of responsibility on my part, and nor did I ever ask, well, hang on a minute, is there a lesson in it? Is this actually here to teach me something? It was, why is it happening? Mm-hmm. Why is the world happening at me? And listen, we do that. It's a human condition.
Absolutely.
Like, and millions, this is if not billions of people do it.
And so, this is the reason why, like, space, yeah, as cool. You are creating, like, this podcast and, you know, like, How to Die Happy and this concept that I found it super beautiful are extremely important, because no one have teach us that there is another way. So, you know what I mean? Like, no one before us. We are really the pioneer of a new way of living. We're really the pioneer of a new, completely era of experience that is coming in front of us, that is different from the one that we've been living for 5,000 years before. So again, you know what I mean? Like, it's our responsibility, and we are here to open up the path because we did it. And there is nothing else, so we can share that and open up for other people to just doing their own path and opening up for their own way of transformation. But like, whoever told you that the word even acceptance and responsibility of your own pain, and that's required as well, a lot of, like, you know, like for me has been, I read this book that I highly recommend to anyone that is at the beginning of their journey and they want to understand from a psychotherapist perspective the journey of the soul, that is called the Soul Code of Hillman. It's a book that is incredible. This guy was a Freudian, Carl Jung is called. It was a Freudian. Was a Freudian of the same lineage of Freud in terms of psychotherapist, and he wrote this book in how the soul, how the soul come into this into the being, and how we choose our parents, and how we choose everything, to go through this school earth experience university for our soul to go through the karma that she has to go through in order to release and get lighter and get back into that unity that we were talking about at the beginning, that union with God, with the divine. So this is what it is. So we choose it. So we choose everything. And we need to take responsibility of that. And I know that sometimes can sound very strong, but there is a level, on a certain energetic level, whatever happened into our life, we called it in energetically. We called it that in, and once that we can start to take responsibility of that, we can start to change that. But without that time, it's not possible. So this is a very important part.
Yeah. Well, it was Carl Jung that conceived the idea of the shadow self as well, isn't it? So, or wasn't it?
Yeah.
I was actually having this very conversation with somebody just this week. Somebody contacted me and to ask me, because I get people contacting me off the back of the podcast, as you would expect, and obviously I write about mental health and I write about my journey, so people reach out to say, hey, look, I read this that you wrote and that's made me think about this, that and the other. And I was having a conversation with somebody about the can you hear the dogs?
Yeah, I can.
Can you hear the dogs? Hey, We're making a podcast.
Oh, they look so cute.
They're lying behind the sofa just like this, playing with each other. Atti and Muda, they make it into every episode. Anyway, what was I saying? The Dark Night of the Soul.
Yeah.
So we were talking about the concept of the Dark Night of the Soul. And he asked me, what was your experience of the Dark Night of the Soul? And I said, well, I've been there and I got the diploma. It is really the beginning of the process.
Absolutely.
And as you just said, that whole self-realization, self-actualization aspect of this, the dark night of the soul, you know, looking at your shadow self and meeting with your shadow self and having that conversation with yourself about the things that you've done, said, thought, you know, your words and actions that have either hurt yourself or other people.
Yeah.
And actually accepting responsibility for them, you know, sitting in the searing hot pain of those events.
And sometimes it's very painful. And that's the reason why, again, I go back into, we need technology. As like, I couldn't have the strength that I had to face very, very heavy demons of mine if I didn't had the experience of grace that I received by opening up to the possibility, by surrendering into that pain and opening up to the faith that there was a greater organization that was taking care of me. And in that moment, that all opened up. But without that experience, without these technologies, without feeling that this is not what is only is, what we see with our own eyes, what the story of our past, all of that is not the only thing. There is much more than that. And surrendering to that, into that possibility, it really gives you the faith to stay strong when those demons again are showing up. Because I believe you, Martin, I'm personally going through hell every other day, you know what I mean? And it's not that I don't, I do. But I have the capacity now to recognize, to know what it is, and to move faster and quicker out of that space. And that's changed everything.
I love what you said there, because that's the beautiful thing about some of these things. Hey, stop, we're making a podcast. Dogs. One of the beautiful things about having practices such as Kundalini is being able to apply that technology to help you to get out of that rut. Because for some people, it's not enough to just be able to meditate, for example. I don't think, for me, my transformational journey wasn't just about meditation. I had plant medicine, I think, which was my kickstart. Ayahuasca and Huachuma, San Pedro cactus, same thing, were the things that helped me sort of kickstart that whole process. But I don't think if I just started to meditate, for example,
exactly,
I don't think I'd be where I am now. And I think so. The point is this combination.
Absolutely.
Of tools that are all available to us. And of course, they're different. It's a different combination for all of us, isn't it?
I think so.
100%.
Although from the sounds of it, Kundalini's.
What I feel about Kundalini, I have done plant medicine, and I haven't done ayahuasca. I just did once peyote, and I love the ceremony. And again, I'm not against any way for you to open up your consciousness and getting into that you know, like that field of possibility that you haven't had. It's welcome. The thing that I really appreciate about Kundalini is just you, and that's it. You know what I mean? Like, it's you and your field, your energy, and you get the same results of whatever is a different things, of course, and it's completely different experiences, but you can get the same type of results without having any plant medicine with you. And maybe that's your journey, or maybe not. For me, like, I've been invited to, like, barely every week to a plant medicine journey in Bali. Like, every week there was somebody that was coming to me and say, why don't we come to you? And I always went very close to say yes, and then inside me was a big no. And it was not no because I'm against it, because I love ceremonies. I carry cacao. I love medicine. So it's not about that. You know what I mean? Like, I love the ceremony. I love the ritualistic shamanic way. But in a way, for me, it was always enough what I was getting with Kundalini that I didn't feel the need then to go into plant medicine. And the reason why I'm saying that also as well, like you can go into a plant medicine and then add those teachings to really sustain that experience. Because what happened with plant medicine most of the time, at least this is what I believe that can happen, and again, it's only my perspective, and take it what you feel and leave it what you don't, but is that it's not sustainable. Like, you cannot go, like, and I saw a lot of people getting addicted and try to find their own strength into coming back to ceremony, one next to the other, one next to the other, one next to the other. one accelerator. But there is no advancement because there is no anything that comes of your own source. Instead, this is just like your own energy that you're working on and you're making them stronger and brighter.
Yeah, no, you make a great point.
And I'd actually agree with that because I've found since I've been working with Kundalini, I've been less drawn to plant medicine.
Yeah.
So the offers come up and I'm always a bit like, I used to be very cool to it and wanting to participate. I think mainly because I love the ceremony as well. But now I feel less and less inclined to work with the plant medicine.
100%.
Well, I think I would add to what you're both saying. You're absolutely spot on. There are some people who solely rely on utilizing plant medicine on a regular basis to expand their consciousness and to do their healing. My own experience is that actually you don't need to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, actually, I've never felt the call to do ayahuasca again since I did it 2 years ago. I did about 10, over nearly a dozen ceremonies. I think around that number, but I've not felt the call to do it again. What I did feel the call to do, which is what you've just alluded to, and that is to then bake some daily practice into my life, which helped me stay centered and grounded. Yeah. And for me, it was meditation. It was yoga, but I've been a bit lax with the yoga for a fair while now. But I meditate every day.
And you also have surf.
At some point of the day.
And you're also surfing. That is another medicine.
Well, yeah, exactly. We have that. We do have that, although I don't do much surfing. But we do want to get involved with more surfing. But I think the fundamental point is that you've to find whatever the practice is that works for you.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. With plant medicine, there is a danger of utilizing it as an escape. You know, a way to distract yourself in another way. It's spiritual, or it can be spiritual bypassing.
100%.
But then, of course, you can use all manner of practices for spiritual bypassing. So I think the fundamental point is to just remember the integration piece.
Yeah.
It's all well and good scooching off to another dimension and having a conversation with your higher self or, you know, whoever's out there at the time. But you've got to be able to, and picking up all of those amazing vibrations of love, but you've got to then be able to come back to planet Earth and be it, put it
and
into
integrate
practice.
It.
So,
yeah.
And I think, and that's why something like Kundalini is so interesting, because it is that daily practice, isn't it?
100%.
Yeah, and it's still a daily practice that you have to integrate.
And you have to find a teacher, and you have to find a teacher that really is very grounded. That's a very another important thing about Kundalini, because you can go very high very easily. So, like for me, what I'm teaching to the teachers that are coming to me and to the people that are coming to me, and the way that I do the practices is really like all of them that are in my mentorship group, they're all has to work their navel point and the foundation and having a very strong foundation, because this is what it is. In this life, in this planet, right now, in this time frame in which we are, we live through the body, and this is the way that we experience the soul. So, and this is the way that the university of the soul must occur. That's it. If we're not strong in our foundation, it's like almost like it's the same things, very, very, very basic teachings. Like you cannot build a monument out of like fake concrete, right? You know what I mean? Like the foundation are so important. And it's the same things for us as humans. Like if we don't have strong foundation and we are not strong in our first three chakras, on the base, in our body, in our sense of safetiness, in our relationship with others, in our willpower, how we can operate on the higher center. We can download God, yes, but who knows that if it's God is your thoughts or whoever, what the hell is that? We have no idea. So it's very important.
Yeah. No, it is. It's a wonderful idea that we must look after our body as well at the same time.
100%.
Work, right? So it's part and parcel of it.
Yeah.
Well, as always, Chiara, I could talk about these things
forever.
For multiple hours.
It'd be great. Yes.
Yeah.
Can you believe we've already been talking for an hour and a half?
Is it really?
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's us saying we're trying to get our podcast down to an hour.
Well, I hope that the folks at home have picked up lots of good stuff on this one, because it was certainly full of it was packed full of goodness, wasn't it?
It was. And before we forget, though, I would like to quickly thank our guest.
Absolutely.
Our guest question, which was Colleen, and she's actually a lady from Bali who left that question, but we didn't mention that at the beginning.
Good point. Mm. Yes, great point. And before I forget, before we wrap up, if you want to find out a little bit more about Kiara, if you go on our website, howtodiehappypodcast.com/on-the-show, under the season 2 listings, you'll find a wonderful black and white photo of Kiara doing a yoga move. Click on that and you can go onto her website and find out a little bit more. On the subject of Be My Guest, in that same section, you can see who we have lined up on the show. So please feel free to send us a question or two or three, as you've heard today, for any of these guests. You can do an audio version, or now, because we also have a video of this podcast, at least on Spotify, you can do a video version if you're feeling brave. Well, Chiara De Lucia, grazie mille, tesoro.
I could talk with you forever. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for who you are. And it's been such a pleasure. Like, it's such an elevated, like, container that we co-create, and you guys are creating for all of us to come into and express ourselves. So thank you so much for your service. And there is nothing more important than arrive to that point when we die happy. And this is the only reason why we're doing what we're doing, feeling that, you know, when we take that last breath and being at peace and let the travel keep going, and this is the reason why we all do what we do and we serve in the way that we serve. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Beautiful.
Thank you, love. Thank you so much.
I love you both a lot.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Enjoy.
Likewise.
See you.
Love you.
Love you. Ciao.
See you soon.
Ciao.
Ciao.
Ciao.